named this thing as Leviathor, and tells how Sigmar and Dracothion battled the abomination across the heavens, always avoiding its cavernous maw and the oblivion that lay within. At last, it is said, they slew Leviathor, and its dark body tattered slowly apart, revealing a white-hot core of pure knowledge, like the pearl within a clam's jaws. Sigmar took this star of wisdom and struck it with Gal Mara's, shattering it into fragments that he kept in Sigmaron until they could be of use.
Martyrus's deep voice had turned lilting as he told the legend, and Tarion now found himself stirring from rapt silence as the Lord Castellant ended his tale.
"And what we stand before, it is one of those moats?" he asked.
Martyrus nodded.
"Much of what Leviathor knew was lost upon the beast's death, but not all. Moreover, the burning star of curiosity and wisdom that had roiled in its gut remained a single entity, even after Sigmar's shattering blow. Caged as the fragments are, they still gladly devour all knowledge that is passed into them and allow it to flow freely between one moat and the next in a way we will never understand. In short, our lore, if knowledge has been offered up to the Cognis Celestis, it can be extracted from any other Cognis Celestis anywhere in the realm."
"How does information reach these devices?" asked Tarion. "If they are such a closely guarded secret, surely few have stood before them to submit their wisdom in the way you describe."
"The star motes are rapacious," said Martyrus. "Even caged in this way, they reach out and take what they want. The moment any storm cast sets foot within the bounds of an eyrie, everything they know, all their thoughts, memories, even their deepest secrets, are drawn from their minds and into the heart of the Cognis Celestis. Stars, it seems, do not wait to ask permission."
"It raids the minds of Sigmar's warriors without consent?" asked Tarion, aghast at such an invasive violation. "These devices... we are all being interrogated without even knowing that we are?"
"This offends you?"
asked Martyrus. "It feels dishonorable, disingenuous." Tarion's jaw tightened. "It means that my knowledge of Neve's curse has been stolen into this thing."
"Calm yourself, Arlo. The Cognis Celestis are not easy devices to draw information out of. They contain entire constellations of useless background noise, along with the vital strategic intelligence they were put in place to transmit. Only the Lord Castellant of each eyrie can access this information. And even then, one must know precisely what one is searching for. The star motes are acquisitive and jealous, echoes of Leviathor himself. They do not easily part with their secrets, and yours will remain safe amongst the morass of pointless wisdom."
Tarion scowled. "Still, this sort of mental leechcraft is
necessary, as are all other weapons to be used in the war against chaos,"
said Martyrus. And Tarion was forcibly reminded that he spoke to one of the uncompromising Knights Excelsior.
"Victory is all that matters, not delicate sensibilities. You hammers of Sigmar enjoy the privilege of a certain naivety alongside your shining heroism. That is not so for us all. Now, do you desire the information that you came here for, or will you balk at its source?"
Tarion took a deep breath and thought about all that was at stake. He hesitated for a long moment, then nodded. Whatever you can tell me.
As I thought,
said Martyrus. He turned to the nearest bank of machinery set into the Cognis Celestis, and his fingers danced over runic sigils and glowing dials. His face set in an intent frown, and the starlight danced across his silvered eye as he worked. Tarion realized that Skywarden was not simply operating the machine, but was in some way wrestling with the intellect of the Starmoat trapped within it. He was a fisherman, plying his line and fighting a spirited, perhaps dangerous, catch. He was a torturer, attempting to interrogate a demigod. The longer Martyrus worked, the more ferociously the bottle star flared and lashed, its cometary bodies arcing rapidly around it. Tarion took a step back as chain lightning stabbed out and crawled across the inside of the glass, questing fingers trying to grasp for Martyrus and punish him for his temerity. The Cognis Celestis flared brighter and brighter, and Tarion shielded his eyes from the ferocious glare. He saw that Martyrus had closed his living eye, only the swiveling silver orb continuing to stare into the Cognis's depths. Tendrils of energy slammed repeatedly against the inside of the crystal dome, as though some vast beast was trying to reach Skywarden and strike him down. There came a final flare of light, an intense pulse of energy that shivered through the walkway, and then Skywarden stepped back from the now smoking console. In one hand, he clutched a small flask of metal and crystal, within which a bright light shimmered.
Here is the information you seek, or as close as I could wrest from the Cognis's heart,
he said, holding the flask out to Tarion.
It is a place to begin. That will have to be enough. Simply open the filter in the flask's lid, then stare into its light, and you will know that which you seek.
Tarion hesitated again before reaching out to take the flask from Skywarden.
Thank you, he said, for your aid and for your discretion.
I ask that you tread lightly in return.
I will try, said Tarion.
Skywarden kept his grip upon the flask for a moment longer, and Tarion found himself meeting the Lord Castellan's fierce stare.
The more valuable or dangerous the information that is drawn from within the Cognis Celestis, the harder it resists parting with it. I have used this device many times, and I have never, ever seen it lash out to the degree that it did today. Do you understand what I am saying to you?
Martyrus released the flask, and as Tarion tucked it into a pouch at his belt, he had the sense of stepping off the edge of a precipice into the void beyond.
I will act carefully, Lord Castellant. You have my word, upon my honour as a Hammer of Sigma.
Tarion offered Martyrus a warrior's salute, which was returned in kind.
Now, find yourself some victuals. Take a few hours to meditate and restore your strength,
said Skywarden.
You must be centered before you absorb the information you have been given, lest it overwhelm your spirit. And if the seer spoke true, it will be long before you get the chance to rest again, Tarion Arlor.
Tarion nodded and turned away, leaping from the railing and soaring to the chamber's entrance. He passed swiftly through the curtained archway and descended the steps two at a time, his movements urgent and his mind whirling. As he went, the flask seemed to weigh heavily in its pouch. Chapter 6 Knowledge blossomed into being in Tarion's mind like buds becoming flowers, one after another. His footsteps led him sure and unwavering through the Excelsian Eyrie, back down to its lowest levels, towards the apothecary's chambers and the quarters reserved for those airborne allies of the Stormcast that could reach the magnificent structure. After eating and resting as best he could, Tarion had opened the filters on the flask and allowed the lights of its secrets to flow into his mind. The experience had been unnerving in the extreme, not a didactic process or factual exposition, so much as the sensation of a door being opened within his mind so that knowledge might spill through. Now he followed that knowledge where it led him, trying to still the slight tremors in his hands all the while. Passing a pair of grim-faced Caradhron, Tarion hurried through a refectory chamber where more of the Dwardin skysailers were bickering over prices as they ate. He passed another arch and along a softly lit corridor lined with curtained doorways. Sweet-scented herbs burned in small braziers between each entrance. Further down the corridor, Tarion saw a pair of white-robed apothecaries speaking in soft tones as they inspected a heavy brass ledger. He knew, with absolute certainty, where to go. As though guided by a bright light, Tarion strode to the third entrance along and swept the curtain aside. The chamber beyond was light and airy, its furniture stern but clean. In a bed beside the arched window lay a figure, who sat up with a start at the sight of a huge Stormcast Eternal looming in his doorway.
"My lord,"
said the elf, his voice grating and raw. Tarion saw that his skin was speckled with weird patches of scar tissue, and his eyes had a crimson tinge to them. The two paused for a moment in mutual surprise, unsure of how to proceed.
"You are Thindrael Anyerios of the Swifthawk Agents, yes?"
asked Tarion. The elf nodded, scrambling out of bed and offering a stiff bow.
"I am, my lord," he said. "Has the Lord Castellan finally answered my plea, then? Are you to aid me?"
"Something of that nature," said Tarion smoothly. "It seems likely that we can help one another. Sit, please, and tell me how you came to be here."
The elf's features passed through several swift, complex expressions beyond the ken of even a reforged human such as Tarion. But he sat as instructed, and cleared his throat with audible discomfort.
"I am here, my lord, in hopes of vengeance," he began.
Tarion flew, Crean soaring ahead. Thindrael's skycutter skimmed through the clouds on Tarion's right, almost close enough to touch. They flew above roiling storm clouds, veined with crackling lightning.
"Is it Sigmar's storm?"
called Thindrael in his rasping voice. Tarion looked down, searching the clouds as though he could pierce them with sight alone.
"I don't know," he replied. "There's every chance. The war spills onto new fronts every day. If it is so, we'd best stay high and remain undetected."
"As you say,"
said Thindrael, sounding unconvinced. He had accepted Tarion's vague talk of a secret mission for the good of the heavens, but clearly hadn't been entirely satisfied by it.
"How far now until we reach your former posting?" asked Tarion.
"Perhaps a day's flight, maybe more," replied Thindrael. "I can't be sure. I was unconscious for a time as Hasha flew. He'd passed out of Gairon altogether, through the Brazen Reach Realm Gate into the Gurish hinterlands before I knew where I was. It took me days to properly gain my bearings, my lord. I was just this side of the Vale by the time I reached Excelsis and Sanctuary."
"But now here you are, back in the skies above Verdantia, alive and seeking answers. Your fortitude is commendable, your determination no less so."
"Thank you, my lord. But neither of those qualities is responsible for my survival," said Thindrael,
frowning over his reins a moment as Hasha flapped through turbulent air.
"My patrol was commanded to be the eyes and ears of Sigmar's armies in this Jade Kingdom, and we failed. We barely saw the killing blow coming ourselves, and of all of them, only I lived. Shame and anger kept me alive, and now hatred drives me back. Whatever duplicitous creatures slew my comrades so cruelly, I want to look into their eyes as I end their lives. I want them to suffer, and to know that they do so at my hand.
Tarion glanced at Thindrail. It was easy to forget, he reflected, just how passionate elvenkind were. For all their grace and nobility, they felt hatred and anger on a level that few other sentient beings could understand.
I hope that I can help you to find the vengeance you seek, said Tarion. Whatever force attacked you, it seems they are bound in some way to my own quest. Are you sure you remember nothing more of who or what they were? There might be some clue in their identity to how they relate to the answers I seek.
I'm sorry, my lord, but there is nothing more. I only pray that I can aid you in finding these answers some other way.
With Sigmar's blessings, we shall find both soon enough, said Tarion.
As the two of them soared on through the gloom of evening, and the storm raged far below. The day or more turned out to be almost three. Tarion was forced to travel at Thindrail's pace, for the elf was still not fully recovered from his wounds, and as a mortal being he required food, water, and sleep. Tarion chafed at each delay, his thoughts turning ever to Neve and the Shadowhammers, now a realm away and more. Would his friend have been able to conceal her visions, he wondered. Would they have become worse? Martyrus's ominous words came back to him time and again, and Tarion felt nebulous dread build in his chest as he wondered what dark fate Black Talon was bound to. He kept these thoughts to himself, however, and did his best not to show his impatience. Thindrail was clearly in pain and exhausted by his exertions, and Tarion did not wish to add to the elf's burdens. They pitched camp atop high ledges dotted with sparse chitterpines and gloaming bells, and Tarion kept watch while his companion slept. He meditated in snatches, trusting Crean to warn him of approaching danger, and doing his best not to listen to the tortured moans and whimpers that escaped Thindrail's lips during sleep. On the third morning, they soared over a vast river delta that teemed with incredible plant life. Lianas, thick as fortress towers, coiled hundreds of feet into the air, forming lattices and tangles amidst which entire ecosystems thrived. Birds in their thousands flocked through the air, snatching insects from the skies to feed their young. Thick mists of spores billowed at ground level, rolling like fog banks across waters that meandered and glinted emerald and blue.
"The mouth of the Everwash," called Thindrail,
pointing downwards.
"A beautiful region. It marks the southern boundary of Verdantia, and by Alariel's grace, it has never known the touch of chaos. I have my bearings now, my lord. We have drifted south of our course, but not by any great span. Follow. We will reach High Crater Watch in a few short hours."
Thindrail plied his reins, turning Hasha north. The great hawk gave a spirited cry and beat his wings, driving on through the morning light. Tarion wheeled on his crystal pinions, settling back onto Thindrail's right flank and dropping slightly behind. He was content to follow his guide for now and to center his thoughts in silence. Ahead, still little more than a grey suggestion on the horizon, lay the Tarrowhane Mountains, amidst which High Crater Watch lay. There, Tarion hoped he would find some hint of what to do next, and how to aid his friend in understanding her visions.
"I am blind in this, Sigmar," he muttered, "but I have faith. Please, my lord, show me the way."
As they neared the mountains, Tarion and Thindrail found themselves flying into stiff headwinds that rose from the towering slopes. Dense forests flowed by below, some groves looking pristine and wild, while others had a sickly cast to them and lurked beneath miasmal clouds.
"The war has touched this land,"
cried Thindrail over the singing winds.
"We believed that the Silverneth had driven Nurgle's followers from these woods altogether. But like mould, the chaos worshippers always returned. Their war has become an endless cycle, one side lying fallow, then resurging in fresh growth, then the other following suit. We may be safe, but I would not trust it. Be on your guard.
Tarion had sensed much of this without the elf's explanation, for his supernatural senses laid bare the threat of chaos below. Yet he nodded and saluted his thanks, whistling for Crien to fly close and keep watch. The Night Venator and the Skycutter swept high over the rotting forests and began to climb, riding gusting thermals up over the lower passes. The mountains themselves were magnificent and strange, Tarion saw, shattered and splintered into incredible shapes as though by some ancient cataclysm. They rose higher and higher towards where glimmering stars described strange constellations in the midday sky. Tarion and Thindrail's senses were alert for the slightest sign of danger, yet they remained unmolested. Still, Tarion could not shake the sense of watchfulness that crept over him. He kept his bow in hand as he flew, ready to knock, draw, and loose in a heartbeat. At last, with the rotting forests left many thousands of feet below and the wind bellowing around them, Thindrail and Tarion came in sight of High Crater Peak. Thindrail angled Hasha upwards in a climb so steep that Tarion feared the elf would be thrown from his skycutter, rapidly gaining height until they soared in thin and freezing air and could look down upon the peak from above.
"How long can you stay at such heights?" shouted Tarion over the wind. "You have ice forming on your craft."
Thindrail, swathed in his elven cloak and still shuddering with cold, made a dismissive gesture with his free hand. He pointed down towards the peak, directing Tarion's gaze.
"It resembles a crown," said Tarion,
taking in the deep crater dug into the very top of the mountain, the jagged spars of stone that rose around its edge.
"Where is the watchtower?" he called, confused.
Thindrail was staring down intently, a frown creasing his features. He shook his head and sent Hasha into a steep dive, stooping towards the crater at speed.
"Sigmar, damn your recklessness,"
cursed Tarion, and followed. An arrow knocked to his bowstring, his wings crackling with energy. Crien spiraled around him, eyes wide for danger. As they neared the mountaintop, Tarion saw there was something at the base of the crater. It was dark and indistinct, buried under drifts of snow. He swept his gaze across the rest of the crater, judging it to be perhaps 500 feet in diameter and largely swathed in cold shadows. Thindrail swept his skycutter in and landed on the snowy ground near the dark humps. Leaving Hasha in his traces, the elf sprang over the side of his chariot and drew his sword before the vehicle had even come to a stop. Tarion swept down beside him, landing with a thump and a shower of snow. He panned his bow across the crater, arrow singing with barely suppressed energy as it pleaded to be released in anger.
"Slow down, Thindrail! We don't know what threat might lurk up here with us," he said.
The elf pulled up short at the booming note of command in his voice. Thus far, Tarion had spoken as a friend and comrade. Now he spoke as a stormcast eternal, and distant thunder rumbled behind his words as he uttered them.
"I just wanted to see."
Thindrail shook his head as though clearing it, raised his blade at guard and looked to Tarion.
"I'm sorry. You take the lead, my lord," he said.
Whistling a command to Crien to circle above them and keep watch, Tarion prowled forward. The deep snow came up to his knees, and he picked up his steps with exaggerated care, conscious of the weight of his armour. Thindrail followed, his feet sinking only an inch or so, his passage making no sound whatsoever. The wind howled over the crater's edge, but down here in its depths, everything was gloomy, cold, and very still. Thus, Tarion heard clearly the strangled moan that escaped Thindrail's lips as they neared the first dark mound. It took a moment for Tarion to make out what he was seeing, before he realized that what jutted from the snow had once been a stone wall with a door set into it. Stonework and wood both had blackened, twisted, and somehow melted together. Strangest of all was the texture of the mass. Tarion drew close and prodded at it with a foot, recoiling slightly in distaste as he found that what had once been solid stone was now spongy and fibrous, almost fungal in nature. He saw Thindrell reaching out a hand towards one such spongy mass and warned him back with a gesture.
"What in Sigmar's name happened here?"
he asked. Thindrell shook his head, face pale and eyes huge. The two of them pressed on, treading carefully past the first twisted mass and into the crater's heart. There were lots of them, Tarion saw, some a dozen feet tall or more, some small and forlorn, mostly buried beneath the snows. He recognised items of furniture fused with the crumpled stonework, what looked like a rack of swords mashed formlessly into a stairway and part of a table. He scowled and pretended not to hear Thindrell's moans of horror as he saw what looked like an elven head and torso melded hideously into a doorframe. All of it, whether it had originally been stone, wood, metal or living matter, had the same black, spongy texture.
"Surely this is some foul artifice of the Chaos Gods," said Tarion,
lowering his bow as they stood aghast amidst the ruins.
"A terrible curse has been unleashed here, one that you were fortunate to escape."
I cannot, said Thindrail. The elf gathered himself, tried again. "Lord, I do not know what happened here, or what did this to my kin, to my watchtower. I see no sign of the one I came in hopes of finding and laying to rest. But now that I see this, I am glad not to. This ghastly place gives me no chance at vengeance. It only fills me with horror. Please tell me that you at least see the answers you seek."
Tarion shook his head, frowning. "If there are answers here, I am too much a fool to see them. I do not understand why Lord Martyrus would have sent me to this place. Whatever practitioners of the dark arts laid High Crater Watch to waste, they are surely long gone now. And if there are answers amidst this ruin, I cannot see them."
"Then what?"
Thindrail's words cut off as Crien gave a piercing shriek of warning. Tarion looked up to see dark shapes spilling over the crater's edge between two of the looming stone shards. A dozen lumpen figures ploughed through the snow down the crater's slope, their debased forms all too familiar. "Rotbringers, Blight Kings of Nurgle," he spat. The Blight Kings were as tall as a stormcast, and even broader, massively muscular, and carrying huge maces, axes, and hammers. Yet where Tarion and his ilk were magnificent, shining warriors, these tainted creatures were rotten and bloated with Nurgle's gifts. Their flesh was split with open sores through which rancid blubber spilled. Buboes and pustules carpeted skin both leathery and necrotic, and a revolting stench billowed from their unwashed bodies and glistening, exposed innards. The Blight Kings lumbered along in rusted helms and clanking verdigris armour, much of their skin exposed even at these extreme heights. If the cold and their obvious frostbite caused them pain, however, they didn't show it. Pounding through the snow at the rear of the group came something more horrible still, a creature that even Tarion did not recognise.
"What is that abomination?" he shouted. "Thindrail, have you seen its like here before? Is this what laid the watchtower low?"
"I didn't see our attackers at all," said the elf. "Perhaps, but no, my lord, I have neither name nor words for that thing."
The beast was enormous, easily 20 feet in height and just as wide. It was a stitched and bloated amalgam of decaying flesh, fangs and splintered claws. Tarion thought he recognised elements of beasts he had seen before, perhaps hints of Thunder Tusk or an Auruk Maw Crusher, but they were suggestions only. From its curling horns the size of battering rams to its six muscular yet misshapen limbs,
its lashing tail that ended in a mace of rotted bone, and its bulging, split belly. The thing was an inexplicable and nauseating horror.
"Whether they attacked the watchtower or no, they're bearing down upon your chariot," said Tarion.
"Ah, gods of old," cursed Thindrail. "Kay Thelima!"
he shouted. Hasha responded instantly, giving a shrieking cry and beginning to beat his wings. Snow billowed as the sky cutter swept across the ground and lifted away. Yet even as Hasha gained height, the unknown abomination opened its stinking maw. Bile gushed over too many fangs, and a huge toad-like tongue lashed out. Thindrail cried out in horror as it slammed into his skycutter like a ballista bolt and smashed it to wreckage. Hasha screeched, flapping madly as the sudden impact tangled him with the splintered wreck. The great hawk plunged amidst a shower of splintered wood and metal, slamming sickeningly into the crater wall and sliding to a stop.
"Hasha!"
screamed Thindrail, and Tarion winced at the loss he heard in the elf's voice.
"Steady!"
he barked, lining up his first shot. Any moment now the Rotbringers would come into ideal range, and he would need to make every shot count.
"There are too many of them," said the elf, his voice hollow. "How can we win this?"
"We are servants of Sigmar himself," replied Tarion. "We cannot lose."
Still, for all his bravado, the knight Venator was unsure. Even as he drew back his bowstring and let fly his first crackling arrow, Tarion knew that his quest must come first. Whatever blind alley the Cognis Celestis had led him down, it had wasted enough of his time already. If he was forced to, Tarion would abandon Thindrail to his fate and make amends to his lost soul later.
"Why did we come here?"
cursed the elf, holding his blade ready in shaking hands.
"What is there for us but death and waste?"
"Have faith, be silent, and fight," said Tarion, loosing his arrow.
The projectile shot across the snow, a streaking bolt of light, and thumped into the chest of the leading Rotbringer. The mouldering warrior staggered at the impact, black gore spurting from the wound in his chest. He fell to one knee, only for his fellows to grab him by his bloated arms and haul him back to his feet.
"You'll have to do better than that,"
bellowed the wounded Blight King, his voice a clotted and gurgling horror.
"Gladly,"
said Tarion, loosing another 3 arrows in lightning-fast succession. They streaked after the first, slamming into the Rotbringer's heart, his throat, and finally his horned helm. The triple impact was thunderous, hurling the Nurgle worshipper from his feet and leaving him spread-eagled and twitching in the snow. His fellows faltered, looked down at their dead comrade, then back up at Tarion. They bellowed in anger and broke into a ponderous charge.
"Stay behind me, away from that damned monster," said Tarion, before launching himself skywards and loosing another volley.
His lightning-imbued arrows rained down upon the charging foe, thudding into flesh and blasting black craters in rusted armour. Several staggered and another fell, but it was not nearly enough.
"They're so damned resilient," he cursed. "Sigmar, lend me strength."
The Blight Kings were in amongst the fungal structures now and baying for blood. Their leader, a hulking brute with a huge bell-shaped mace and an eyeless brass helm, shouted orders at his followers.
"Spread out, my beauties," he snarled. "Surround the elf. Bring the lightning whelp down however you can. I want some rot-damned answers. Indeed I do."
Tarion soared over the Blight Kings and continued to rain arrows upon them. As each shaft was launched from his bow, another crackled into being in his quiver, Sigmar's blessings providing him with an endless supply of ammunition. He placed a shot beautifully, straight down through one Rotbringer's collarbone and into his foul heart. The Chaos Worshipper staggered another 2 steps, then toppled onto his face. Another volley and Tarion sent a 4th Blight King crashing into the snow, peppered with shafts. The next instant, he was forced to bank madly to avoid a billowing cloud of plague flies belched from the sack-like throat of one of his attackers. The buzzing storm of insects swept after him, dropping from the air in clumps as the cold killed them quickly. Yet they still stung and bit him again and again, and Tarion felt himself growing sluggish and dizzy as his body fought to stave off the diseases they transmitted.
"Tarion!"
He heard Thindrail's shout over the thrumming roar of the swarm, and he dived to get below them. Tarion saw that the elf had tried to retreat between the fungal mounds, only to find himself hemmed in by them on both sides, with rotbringers before and behind him. Thindrail lunged, stabbing his blade at the nearest chaos worshipper. The rotbringer didn't even try to parry the blow, allowing the elf's sword to sheathe itself to the hilt in his rotting flesh. Even as Tarion watched in horror, a gaping maw split open in the Blight King's belly and bit down on Thindrail's hands, where they still gripped the sword's hilt. Blood sprayed, and the elf fell back with a scream, flailing the ragged stumps of his wrists. Tarion swore and unleashed a storm of shots that showered the chortling Blight King. His laughter cut off as lightning-wreathed arrows punched deep into his body and sent him crashing to his knees. The drone of the swarm sounded in Tarion's ears again, but this time it was pierced by Crean's shriek. The Star Eagle dived through the diminished mass of insects, his body blazing like a newborn star. Flies dropped, crisped and blackened, to carpet the snow below, and Tarion flashed his companion a grin of thanks. His face fell as he saw Thindrail topple onto his back, his blood pumping across the snow. The elf had a ghastly smile on his face, Tarion saw, his eyes far away and his mouth moving. Tarion dropped from on high to stand protectively over his fallen comrade, shooting a storm of arrows into his enemies that drove them back. As he did, he heard the elf whispering a delirious greeting.
"Yilith, my love, no, no, don't be sorry. At last."
Tarion didn't move. "I'm so sorry, Thindrail," he said finally. "They won't lay another filthy hand upon you, I swear it."
"Make no promises that Grandfather won't let you keep, Stormcast,"
bellowed the Blight King's leader, emerging from behind the nearest fungal mound.
"I want to know where your 8 damned allies have hidden. I've a score to settle, and you're going to tell me how I gnaw down to the bone of things."
The Blight King shrugged off first one arrow, then another, swinging his bell mace up and over in a meteoric arc. Tarion leapt frantically aside, and his attacker's weapon crashed down on Thindrail's dying body in an explosion of blood and bone. The bell tolled as he struck, a hollow note that rolled around the crater. Tarion snarled and shot more arrows into the Blight King from point-blank range. The first pierced his eyeless helm and stuck there like a weird horn. The second sank deep into his chest, blackening his leathery flesh. Still the warrior did not fall.
"I seethe with the Grandfather's blessings, Stormcast," he roared, swinging his weapon with surprising speed.
This time Tarion was a split second too slow, and the bell caught him a glancing blow to the chest. Its reverberations rolled across the crater, seeming to fill Tarion's head as he was flung bonelessly into the snow. He drew breath, hissing in pain as he felt bone grind together in his chest. Still, Tarion forced himself back to his feet, knocking another arrow as his wounded enemy staggered closer.
"You'll fall before you finish me, rotling," spat Tarion.
"Maybe, but you've forgotten my gruesome pet,"
said the Blight King with a gurgling laugh.
"Lord Unghorgot breeds them hungry."
Tarion heard the thudding footfalls of something huge behind him, saw the snow jump and dance at its coming. He launched himself straight up, flakes billowing in his wake, and the abomination's wickering tongue shot beneath him, smashing apart one of the fungal mounds. Tarion pirouetted in the air, launched 3 arrows in quick succession that sank into the abomination's face. One shot punctured a cluster of eyes that clung above its snout, causing the monster to howl. It reared up, huge nostrils flaring, and spat its tongue at him again. Tarion wheeled away, narrowly avoiding the attack, only to feel something slam into him with tremendous force. armour buckled and bone splintered, the sounds drowned out by the hollow peal of a huge bell, and Tarion fell from the skies like a stone. He slammed into the snowy ground and rolled to a stop, gasping for breath. Looking up, Tarion saw the Blight King's leader pick up his bell mace from where it had landed after his remarkable throw. He chuckled deep in his chest as he trudged towards Tarion, who tried and failed to get up. Several of his bones were broken, he could tell, and crawling skeins of lightning played across his dented armour and torn flesh. Tarion was hurt badly, and his desperation grew as he faced the threat of being slain again. By the time he had been reforged and recalled as much as he could of what he was, he would surely be too late to aid Neve. The remaining Blight Kings closed around him in a circle, their abomination looming behind them. Tarion spat blood and angrily cursed the false and pointless trail that had brought him to this place. Crean flapped down and landed on Tarion's shoulder, shrieking angrily and raising cruel laughter from the chaos worshippers. It was then that he saw the ghost of movement amongst the snows, lithe figures, half seen and strange. Their movements were unnatural, their limbs flowing and inhuman. He saw their eyes glinting blue and iridescent black against the snowfield. It was as though they flowed up from the ground itself, sprouting like dark and menacing trees behind the Blight Kings. The Chaos Worshippers had not yet seen the danger, and Tarion managed a pained laugh as their leader loomed over him.
"Bravado won't get you far now, storm whelp," growled the hulking warrior. "You're mired too deep. Best to rip the leech's maw off quick and earn yourself a gifted death, lest the blights take you slow. Where are the damned tree people?"
"Closer than you'd like," said Tarion.
With a shrill hiss that rose like a gale through a thicket of trees, the Sylvaneth attacked. Dozens of dryads fell upon the Blight Kings from behind, lashing with willowy talons and hissing their war songs with glee. Taller, stouter tree beings waded into the fight, swinging huge amber scythes that split and tore the Blight King's flesh with ease. The abomination turned and lashed out with talons and tongue, but even it was overrun as shrilling tree creatures tore at it with deranged strength. Tarion watched the carnage with wide eyes, noting with alarm the dark and twisted aspect of his saviours, the shadowy wisps that clung to them, and the cruel savagery with which they fought.
"Dreadwood," he murmured to Crean, "we may not be safe yet."
At last, the butchery was done. Nothing remained of the Blight Kings but torn and mangled heaps of flesh, whose rancid juices were already seeping away into the snows. Tarion pulled himself to his feet, leaning on his bow as a willowy creature approached him. It was humanoid and vaguely female in shape, its long limbs and flowing body thick with thorns and jutting twigs. Black leaves and delicate creepers grew from its scalp and flowed down its back, a strange approximation of hair. Its eyes were large and almond-shaped and glinted like polished jet. The creature, a branch wraith by his reckoning, stopped before Tarion and performed an elaborate, fluid gesture that he guessed was its approximation of a bow. Tarion returned it as best he could, gritting his teeth through the pain of his injuries.
"Thank you," he said. "I owe you my life. And my Lord Sigmar owes you a debt of gratitude."
"No debt be owed from thundersome skies," said the being, its voice a musical croon that creaked and soared like branches in a night wind. "The fowl and the abir we slay gladsome."
Tarion blinked, deciphering the branch wraith's strange words.
"You and I both," he said after a moment. "But still, I give you thanks for your aid."
"Thank not this thickleting yet, winged stormcaster,"
said the branch wraith, with a sharp-fanged smile. Tarion was suddenly acutely aware of the veritable growth of Sylvaneth that now sprouted around him at the crater's heart. There were dozens, large and small, a whole warband of the fey creatures. The Sylvaneth of Dreadwood had the darkest reputation of all their kind.
"Why do you say so?" he asked slowly. "Do you mean me harm?"
A susurrus passed through the assembled Sylvaneth, and it took him a moment to understand that he was hearing a cruel approximation of laughter.
"Harming you? Why, that would we do?" asked the branch wraith. "Safe hold your flesh from the rotling's touch. Just about the turn and strike you down. No, Caprice has its roots, and its branches both, and neither reach such lengths."
"Then what?" asked Tarion. "Is there some debt I now owe you?"
"This only do you need to attend," said the branch wraith, leaning close.
He smelt deep, wet loam and the cold bark of the nighttime forests in driving rain.
"Hear you the words of Ithari, she the handmaid, thrice coiled of the woods and witch, wither. It is time for the unworthy changeling child to come to us. It is time that her seeings became doings, became pains of the debt that long planted now ripens and bursts to seed. Tell her step she through the brazen reach gate, her swiftly trod self, a mere look she upon the lands beyond the river's third winding. There, skyling, she'll see her truths, and come she back to where the bloodsy crop must be plucked."
Tarion gaped. "You're talking about Black Talon. How do you know all this? How did you know to find me here?"
"Just speak in the words to her, and let her fresh shoots grow to shadowed place," said Ithari. "And we be glad. We've use for such as yourself, lest we leave you ragged to feed the flowers as well."
With that, the Sylvaneth turned as one, and, ignoring Tarion's shouted questions, they flowed up the sides of the crater. As they entered the shadows around the crater's walls, they seemed to flow into them and vanish, one by one. In moments, Tarion stood alone, bewildered, exhausted, and angry, amidst the bodies of the dead. Shaking his head, he hobbled over to the ruined remains of Thindrail.
"I have absolutely no idea what just happened," he said quietly. "What those creatures told me or why it will help. But it was answer enough, and for that and your sorrowful sacrifice I thank you. I only hope that I can keep my promise and take your vengeance for you one day. Go with Sigmar's blessings."
With that, Tarion launched himself painfully skywards. He would gain the lower slopes before he rested, find food and a safe place to meditate for a time before attempting the flight back to Neve. He knew roughly where his comrades must be by now, but still he had a grueling journey ahead of him and only uncertain answers to give.
"I hope it is enough," said Tarion
as he swooped over the crater's rim and left that dark and shadowed place behind him. Neve strode through the gloom, running one hand absently through the long blue-grey grass that rose up to her waist. Troubled thoughts chased one another through her mind, the memory of an axe stroke missed due to a phantom child's cry, followed by the awful recollection of collapsing in a vision-racked fugue far out amongst the rock spires. She had remained undetected by friend or foe through nothing more than good fortune. Neve recalled 2 days past, when Calparius Forerunner had called her name 3 times before she had responded to him. The first two she had been sure that she was hearing the crackle of burning huts, the whispering creak of branches in the wind. "It is getting ever worse," she whispered to herself. "I do not know how much longer I can conceal this curse. Damnation, Tarion, if you do not return soon, I will be forced to set out on my own account. Perhaps I should simply have done so in the first place." Neve stared out into the darkness of the steps, her hunter's eyes piercing the darkness in search of movement. None who saw her would guess that she was watching, not for foes, but for the telltale glimmer of her comrade's wings approaching in the night sky. Neve knew that, without some hint of where to start her quest for answers, she would risk wandering aimlessly for many moons, leaving her duty to Sigmar neglected all the while. Yet she couldn't simply wait for others to come to her rescue, and the longer she waited, the worse her affliction seemed to become. With a frustrated sigh, Neve turned back towards the inviting light of the ranger's campfire. "One more night," she promised herself. "Two at the most, while we hunt the Gorkin. Then if he's not back, I'll seek my own damned answers." The light welcomed her as she approached, reaching out to bathe her in its amber glow. Carias Wintercrest and several of his rangers sat on rocks around the crackling fire. Neve's old comrade nodded a greeting as she settled on her own rock.
"Anything out there?"
he asked. Neve, removing her helm and setting it by her feet, quirked an eyebrow at him. "If there is, I'd hope to Sigmar that your sentries are up to the task of spotting it. We're dealing with Gorkin, Carias, not subtle creatures."
"True enough,"
said the Ranger Prime.
"I've not seen my astral compass so much as twitch in 2 days, though. Wherever the bulk of the enemy are hiding, they're not out here."
"I still don't understand this," said Neve, shaking her head. "The Craven Steps have never, in all the time they've been observed, remained passive when the creatures of chaos drew near. They've always fled, often violently. So why did they allow the Bray Herd to pass unremarked?"
"It's as though the land is sleeping or bewitched," said Wintercrest. "It is no wonder that Fort Vigilance had no warning of the attack."
"It is the work of the Zangor, the Bray, as a sworn to Zinch the Changer," said Galith Hammerfist.
One of Carias's longest-serving rangers, Hammerfist had seen more battle than most. He was always utterly certain in his pronouncements.
"You believe so?"
asked Wintercrest.
"Aye, likely as Sigmar sits his throne in the heavens, I do," said Hammerfist. "Magic and illusion are meat and bread to those twisted monsters. And the way the fortress's wall came down. I've seen a lot, but nothing that's ever made me believe in such a thing as shoddy Dwarden craftsmanship. No chance that came down without unnatural aid."
"At least we know now what happened to the garrison," said Neve grimly. They had found the remains of the unfortunate soldiers several days' march to the east of the fortress, at the end of a broad and blood-splattered trail of hoofprints. Those that had not been left part devoured along the way had been skinned and impaled upon crude wooden stakes around a huge stone idol in the deep wilds. The sight of over 100 such abused corpses screaming sightlessly at the skies had been enough to shock even the war-hardened Shadowhammers. They had brought the bodies down quickly and used some of their precious alchemical oils to burn them.
"Yes, it's a revenge hunt now," said Carias thoughtfully, "and a search for some damned answers. This whole business has been bloody and strange, and I look forward to seeing its end."
"Let us hope that we don't lose too many more brothers and sisters before we conclude this fight,"
said Elora Fireshot, another of the seated rangers.
"Casualties have been light thus far," said Carias, "and those that have fallen will be reforged soon enough."
"Aye, but at what cost?" asked Hammerfist. "You've seen the signs, same as all of us. Reforging isn't the perfect resurrection they told us it was, Carias."
Neve felt her chest tighten at the sudden turn the conversation had taken. She kept her face carefully neutral, took a swig from her canteen.
"Careful now," said Wintercrest. "Signs and sedition aren't talk for the hammers of Sigmar."
"We're away and gone in the wilds, Carias," said Fireshot. "What safer place to speak our minds? You know, same as we do, what's been going on."
"I know there are stories," said Wintercrest. "Stories that true warriors of Sigmar should know better than to put stock in."
He shot a pointed glance at Neve, the gesture almost stopping her heart for a second with the fear of detection. She had been so careful. Had he seen something?
"Black Talon is a warrior, not some starch-cloaked lord," said Fireshot.
And Neve breathed again as she realised that Wintercrest had been cautioning his warriors about the presence of a senior officer, not indicating some veiled blame.
"No harm ever came from asking questions," said Neve carefully. "But we're hammers, the first forged. Don't forget, we've no room for failure, and doubt makes us weak."
"So does ignorance," said Hammerfist.
He pulled a skinning knife from his boot, held out his bare palm, and ran the blade quickly across it. He turned his hand over and squeezed. They all saw the crackling sparks that fell amidst his trickling blood.
"Only since my last reforging," he said. "Happens every time I'm cut. Don't try and tell me that's normal."
The rangers sat in silence for a moment, watching the sparking blood drip to the ground.
"You've all heard the whispers of worse," said Hammerfist, as the flow stopped, and he replaced his gauntlet. "Hammers that come back without the power of speech, sealed into their bloody armour. Hammers that aren't out but armour, with the storm's energy inside. Voices made of thunder, visions of men made purely of the storm."
"What if it's the chaos taint?" asked Fireshot. "We're down here in the realms, fighting through all these terrible places where chaos has reigned for hundreds of years.
We've all seen what the raw power of the dark gods can do to living flesh, to the lands themselves even. What if something has seeped into our souls as we've fought?
Bandus was fighting Archaon himself before he started to see visions, or so they say."
Neve gritted her teeth, willing the conversation to turn elsewhere.
"Vandus is our greatest hero," she heard herself say, voice tight.
The others looked at her in surprise, but Neve pushed on. "It's one thing to speak your minds, but another to forget yourselves and start casting